It's time to read the East Valley News. Thank you for joining me. I'm your volunteer reader, Bill Carney. Today we're going to be focusing on the news of the past week from Ahwatukee and Tempe, including Robinson calls his first year on council very busy. Tempe Union, Kyrene joint meeting examines challenges, collaboration. Local walk sought to correct HIV stigma, misinformation. Our first article from the Ahwatukee Foothills News. Robinson calls his first year on council very busy, by Paul Mariniak. Just over 1 year ago, Kevin Robinson made some political history in Ahwatukee on April 19, 2023. Actually, that day he took his seat on the Phoenix City Council resonated across the city as the newly elected Council District 6 representative. He was Ahwatukee's first new representative on the council since Sal DeCicio was elected in 2009 and the first black candidate elected to the council outside of District 8. And with the simultaneous swearing-in of new District 8 Councilwoman Keisha Hodge Washington, that ceremony ushered in the first time Phoenix City Council has had more than one African American. But history wasn't much on Robinson's mind as he began his 4-year stint in service to a city that he also served for over 36 years in the Phoenix Police Department, rising from the ranks of patrolman, whose beat included Ahwatukee, to assistant chief for 12 years before he retired in 2013. As he recalled in an interview, the realities of his new job left little room for anything else to think about. I think more than anything else, the most surprising thing was the amount of work that it takes to really be current on the issues, said Robinson, who with his physician wife, Dr. Michelle Hallard, raised 3 children. Recalling how a few days prior to the AFN interview, he and his 3-member staff had spent hours studying the intricacies of an issue before the Camelback East Village Planning Committee, he explained. There's a tremendous amount of work on every single issue that comes before our office, and I think I really didn't understand that. Now, I will also say that this being my first year, I may be diving in a little bit more than others. I don't know for sure. But it's not a bad thing. It really gives me basis for my foundation, a basis for my understanding of the issues. Robinson's sprawling district, shaped like a barbell with a corridor along 48th Street, joining Ahwatukee to the south, and villages like Camelback and Arcadia to the north, keeps him on his toes. He has kept his promise to make regular appearances before constituents in Ahwatukee, holding coffee sessions at least once a month at a local restaurant or Pecos Community Center, while also starting to attend Village Planning Committee meetings here. Though the odometer on his car racks up some miles traveling around the district, he also relies on 2 staffers who divide the district in 2. With Jack Kenny being his man in Ahwatukee and Cody Kellogg taking Arcadia and neighboring villages. Along with Chief of Staff Jennifer Wingenroth, Robinson said his office has resolved 700 citizen complaints and issues since he took office. Quite honestly, it's been all hands on deck, Robinson said. We help each other out on different issues when there's an issue that is really complicated. Others will get involved so that we have more ears and eyes on an issue. And what my opinion allows us as an office is to be more receptive and to deal with things more proactively. I think we're more complete in our approach to these things. While Robinson says he's put in around 50 hours a week on his council job, it's not his only occupation. He's on the board of the Arizona Peace Officer Standards and Training Board, often called AZ Post, which establishes and maintains standards of integrity, competence, and professionalism for Arizona peace officers and correctional officers, and decides discipline for officers who have violated those standards. He also sits on the Arizona Judicial Council, which oversees the state's judicial system. And he teaches at Arizona State University's School of Criminology and Social Justice. This semester, he's teaching just one course titled Inequality, Crime and Criminal Justice. He described it as a hard look at the economic realities of people involved in the criminal justice system. But with all those other responsibilities, he added, I'm putting more time into and am involved more with the council activities than I am with anything else. His criminal justice background has made Robinson a point man for counsel in the 2-year U.S. Department of Justice investigation into the Phoenix Police Department and the city's negotiations to avert a consent decree that could cost taxpayers millions of dollars to a third-party entity that would oversee police operations almost indefinitely. Council has voted tentatively to oppose a consent decree and possibly go to court to fight any particularly adverse findings that emerge from a probe that is hurtling toward the 3-year mark. Robinson earlier this year visited top Justice Department officials in Washington, D.C. to provide what he feels might be a missing perspective in that investigation. I'm very concerned, he said. The Department of Justice has a job to do. They're conducting an investigation, and their findings are going to be pretty significant as to how we advance the city. If there's a decision on their part to place us under a consent decree, that's going to be very expensive, and we're not printing money in the basement, so that means we're going to have to reallocate funding. We're going to move money around from other places. I mean, there's a lot of things that have to be considered and a lot of things that would have to be done. And under those circumstances, I hope we're able to sit down with the Department of Justice and figure something out, because I think that's the best case scenario, where we can accomplish what they would like to see us accomplish, and it would save us the ability to be a better servicing city, in both the police department and all other city departments. But it will take sacrifice. I think that's the one thing everyone has to understand. It will take some form of sacrifice. But that's not the biggest issue Robinson feels he has had to confront as a councilman. Asked what he considers the thorniest issue to confront him since he took his oath, Robinson replied, At the city level, that's easy to answer. It is homeless issues. We had to deal with the issues surrounding the zone. Fortunately, it was an issue that impacted all council members. Everyone came together on that. We were a cohesive group in dealing with that problem, and we were able to, I think, address it pretty effectively. Now, I'm not saying we eradicated the problem by no stretch of the imagination, but what we were able to do is demonstrate that collectively, when we come together, there are very few things that we cannot deal with. As for local issues, he said, what I've always known about Ahwatukee is that it's a community with residents who are really engaged. They know things. They understand. They're in tune with what's going on in their communities. So because of that, it's really easy for us to deal with the things that come up because we already have the eyes and ears that are out there. They're bringing the issues to our attention, and we're working on them to deal with things pretty effectively. The best example I can give for you is that we are having some homeless folks staying in some of those tunnels, and Jack in our office was able to pull together the city departments and the state departments that were necessary to clean up the area. And now that problem is gone. And that's because the residents saw this as an issue they knew would only get bigger, and they brought us in early. And working collectively, we were able to get everything taken care of. One issue, he said, he and his staff are still trying to address in Ahwatukee involves traffic. More than one neighborhood group has brought up traffic concerns, he said, citing one example as speeding around school zones. Robinson worked with the department to get some of those speed cameras out there where people can see how fast they're going, and we're able to take that data, and then it tells us where we need to set up enforcement, he added, stating, we're working in lockstep with the police department on the problem. Ironically, Ahwatukee also is home to the man Robinson describes as his most important mentor as he began learning the job of city councilman, a job that in some respects, he suggested, is a never-ending learning experience. Alton Washington, a retired assistant city manager who did a lot of things for the city of Phoenix, Robinson said, has been a valued advisor. Alton has a real good feel for all kinds of things, people in the community. He knows how things work in the city. So he's been the ultimate in someone that I can go to and bounce things off, he said. He kind of steers me the right way. So when you talk about a mentor, he's been a significant one. As he begins his second year in office, Robinson foresees public safety as the biggest challenge facing Phoenix, and surprisingly, it is not necessarily from the police side. The city is growing so fast, there have been so many calls for service from the fire department, he said. There's a lot more resources that need to be poured into the fire service. We have to pay attention to that. We're putting the new station in Ahwatukee. We need to act as quickly in every other part of the city of Phoenix. We pay particular attention to the response times of the fire department, he continued. The likelihood of one of us needing the police is not as high as the likelihood of us needing the fire department, and that's why we need to keep that in mind. So far, Robinson said, he feels he and his office have been doing what he intended to do when he took his seat on the council, namely, serve his constituency as well as the broader citywide constituency. He credits his career in law enforcement for his ability to deal with issues that come before him. We always tried to slow things down to be more effective, he said, and I try to do the same thing here in dealing with problems. I try to slow them down and work the problem. Don't worry about all other things on the periphery. Work the problem. Understand what's the issue. What's the concern that the residents have? And I've been, I think, very successful. I would say our office has been very successful by zeroing in on the specifics and dealing with them. That was Robinson calls his first year on council very busy. You are listening to the East Valley News on Sun Sounds of Arizona. Today we are focusing on the news of the past week for Ahwatukee and Tempe. I'm Bill Carney, continuing on with the Ahwatukee Foothills News. Tempe Union, Kyrene, Joint Meeting Examines Challenges, Collaboration, also by Paul Mariniak. Exchanging more data, facilitating the transition from middle school to high school, and sharing resources to preserve specialty programs like band in an era of shrinking enrollment and funding were key topics at a joint meeting last week of the Tempe Union and Kyrene Governing Boards and top administrators. Both Tempe Union Board President Armando Montero and Kyrene Board President Kevin Walsh pointed to the meeting as an expression of their and their colleagues' desire for more collaboration, especially since both districts are grappling with the projected loss of hundreds of students and the accompanying state funding in the 2024-25 school year and likely beyond. It's not like the districts don't talk to each other, however. Both Tempe Union Superintendent Dr. Stacia Wilson and Kyrene Superintendent Laura Tonez noted that they and their staffs meet at least quarterly to discuss curriculum and other issues. They also noted they have met to discuss safety and security issues. However, the meeting last Wednesday was the first of its kind since both districts and Tempe Elementary have met several years ago to coordinate their school calendars. Tempe L and Tempe Union board members also met last summer in a session similar to last week's meeting. The Tempe Union and Kyrene superintendents and board members acknowledged that more collaboration is necessary, particularly when it involves easing the often traumatic transition of an eighth grader into his or her freshman year in high school, as well as saving arts and other specialty programs that are threatened by a budget axe. Tempe Union Board member Burdetta Hodge, also is a Tempe City Council member, said she thought there are ways the district can better collaborate on the transition between middle school and high school, stating it often is extremely hard for youngsters. But when Walsh asked what can be done, Hodge conceded, "That's the million-dollar question. I don't know what that looks like." Hodge added that the question was particularly challenging when it involves special needs children. Kyrene board member Michelle Fahey noted her district has been addressing that transition. "We have really embraced a new approach to new policies," Fahey said. "We make a big effort to include our marginalized groups," she continued, suggesting more could be done to include the students themselves in conversations about transition-related issues. "We have kids in Kyrene and in Tempe Union who I bet would have a lot to share with us about I wish I had known, or I wish somebody did this for me, or I wish somebody told me this in 7th or 8th grade, Fahey said. Or our kids may have things that they're worried about or wondering about. If we give them opportunities to articulate those things, I think we might get some really good ideas of the kinds of things that we need to do when we're trying to support them. I think we could do the same with our parent groups. But none of this is to say Tempe Union isn't already helping with that transition, Wilson said. She pointed to the fact that each high school has showcase nights when parents are going to check out the high school and see all the different opportunities and their programs. Arts programs also garnered considerable discussion at the meeting as Tempe Union Board Vice President Sarah James and Kyrene Board Member Trine Nelson spoke passionately about the need to preserve them, lest kids took to other schools outside the district to participate in music, theater, or related programs. Are we going to say goodbye to those who are going to apply? James asked, saying that for some students, such programs literally saved their lives. It's either we say, yes, we understand this is important. Yes, this is what draws our families to these districts, James said. Or you have to say no to this right now, because once you let a program slide, it's very difficult. Not impossible, but very difficult to bring it back. Nelson agreed, stating, not everyone is going to do baseball. She recalled speaking with a parent who said, one of the hard things for my family during COVID was trying to figure out how do we maintain our arts program, and I really feel like it was the tenacity of the band and orchestra director at our specific middle school that really held on to that to make sure that he had a really collaborative relationship with Mountain Point. She spoke of the passion middle school students in band have for that activity and the risk the district takes in not meeting that desire. I do think that's important, especially when we talk about the things that we do and the things that we champion, to have success to that. I also understand the difficult times, but it is really like if you lose a student, it's like you're not just losing that orchestra member. You're losing potentially your valedictorian, your president of this club. And so really, there are programs that are important that make us stand out, Nelson continued. Noting that Kyrene and Tempe Union have shared a Mandarin teacher and suggesting there might be other opportunities to share teachers who have expertise in a specialized field, Wilson expressed frustration over the impact of the enrollment decline-driven loss of funding, especially because we know that for some students, academics is not a thing that gets them through the door and coming to school. I know we talked a little bit about athletics and our arts programs, but robotics competition, you recognize there is a sense of belonging that is created through that. She said, adding, culinary, auto tech, career technical ed programs also do the same thing. I'll just be candid with you. It's heartbreaking for us and the recent enrollment declines and having to reduce some of that because we know that those are things we want. But the truth is, this variety really extends our reach. And so I think it's great the more we could collaborate. We really want to have that beginning of something for every student who comes in. But we can't when you have fewer students and fewer assets. That's just reality. Fahey echoed that frustration, stating, I think we are in a place in the state of Arizona, in Kyrene, in Tempe Union, where you don't have as many kids, and funding is terrible, and we can't offer. I mean, when my kid went to Corona, I couldn't get over the laundry list of amazing courses and opportunities. My guess is some of those aren't on the list anymore. It's not because you didn't want to do it, and I think that's where we are. Tonya's noted that Kyrene Middle School principals have strong relationships with the Tempe Union principals and teachers, often inviting them to special events. That prompted Tempe Union board member Andres Barraza to suggest that high school teachers and even some Tempe Union students could introduce middle school students to some of the really cool things that they work on in higher grades. I think the more we can foster the collaboration between our districts, Barraza said, that just makes us stronger. That was Tempe Union, Kyrene, Joint Meeting Examines Challenges Collaboration. Our next article, Local Walk Sought to Correct HIV Stigma Misinformation, by Brenna Gouched. Kenyon Bailiu was handing out leaflets and condoms at the Aunt Rita's Paint the Town Red AIDS Walk and Arizona 5K Run when he talked candidly about his own HIV diagnosis, a discovery he made only because he was being treated for substance use disorder. Taros came to do HIV testing and STI, or sexually transmitted infection testing, said Bailiu, a Taros Health Program supervisor. I found out 9 years ago that I was HIV positive, and if I never went to rehab or I never got tested, I would never know my status. Taros Health, an Arizona healthcare company, was among the partner organizations involved in the AIDS Walk Arizona and 5K run on April 6th in Tempe. Aunt Rita's Foundation, which began in 1988 with the purpose of filling in the gaps in community HIV care, was the organizer of this year's event. The foundation supports HIV prevention and treatment programs with grants to groups like Taros Health that may not have had the budget to cover its wide range of HIV-related services. It's so important because it's 2024 and there's still stigma, Bailiu said. We have to be self-conscious and we have to know our status. The evolution in HIV treatment and education since the United States AIDS epidemic began in the 1980s has been life-saving. Testing and treatment are now more widely available than ever, but misinformation often presents a barrier to some who need this care. Some people think it's transmitted by saliva. Some people think you can get it from mosquito bites, Andrea Lucer, an HIV nurse navigator at Neighborhood Outreach Access to Health, said about the importance of demystifying HIV transmission. A lot of people just don't know how HIV is transmitted. In reality, HIV can be transmitted by sexual contact, sharing needles, or during pregnancy, birth, and breastfeeding, according to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. The only bodily fluids that can transmit HIV include blood, semen, preseminal fluid, rectal fluids, vaginal fluids, and breast milk. HIV, the human immunodeficiency virus, attacks cells that help fight infection and makes a person more vulnerable to other infections and diseases. It can lead to the deadly disease of AIDS if untreated. HIV treatment now includes antiretroviral therapy and involves taking medication prescribed by a health professional. ART is taken in pill form initially and may be switched to a longer-lasting shot form. This treatment reduces the amount of HIV in the body so it becomes undetectable, thus becoming untransmittable. It's not a cure for HIV, but it helps. It's manageable, Lucer said. So you're undetectable, you can't transmit it, and the virus isn't replicating. Developed by the White House Office of National AIDS Policy and published in December of 2021, the National HIV/AIDS Strategy for the United States outlines a government commitment to end the HIV epidemic in the country by 2030. The strategy zeroes in on where efforts are most needed. Although HIV remains a threat in every part of the United States, certain populations and parts of the country bear most of the burden, signaling where HIV prevention, care, and treatment efforts must be focused. The strategy identifies disparities according to data provided by the CDC. Those who identify as gay, bisexual, or a man who has sex with men, especially among the Black, Latino, and American Indian, Alaska Native community, may have a higher risk of contracting the virus. Communities that also may be at higher risk are Black women, transgender women, youth, and people who inject drugs. These disparities exemplify the need for proper education and accessible testing in places like homeless shelters, rehabilitation centers, and schools. When Bailiu learned he was HIV positive in a rehabilitation center 9 years ago, he said it probably took him a month to see a doctor and 2 months to start treatment. Now Arizona offers Rapid Start for State of Arizona Rapid Treatment, a system where patients can see a doctor within 72 hours of a positive HIV test result and start treatment immediately afterwards. It's not like it was 40 years ago. It's not a death sentence, Bailey said. Because of the medications that are out there, people live into their 80s and 90s now. Kimberly Jordan, representing Queer Center and the Trans Spectrum of Arizona at the event, has been involved in HIV activism and advocacy since 1995 after witnessing many of her friends die from the virus. Jordan said, eliminating the stigma in all communities is vital if real change is to be enacted. In the Black community, it's still tough, Jordan said. I just did a panel at a church, a Black church here in Phoenix, and the snickers and the laughs and the disrespect that were coming toward the speakers were really disheartening. Although data shows HIV disproportionately affects some communities, the notion that only these communities are able to contact the virus is false. A lot of people think that it's people of color that get HIV, or only gay people that get HIV, Beaulieu said. But really, everyone can get HIV. It doesn't matter what color you are, what creed you are, what sexual orientation, you can catch HIV. The two most common pieces of advice from every table at the event: talk about it and get tested. That was Local Walk Sought to Correct HIV Stigma Misinformation. Thank you for joining me today for the East Valley News for Ahwatukee and Tempe. I'm your volunteer reader, Bill Carney. Stay tuned for the Arizona Republic coming up next on Sun Sounds of Arizona.